You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
And the amount of husbands I hear about that come back from work and go, well, what's the problem? You know, so-and-so's wife is absolutely fine.
I really like your angry husband voice, by the way.
Oh, don't. I've got a repertoire, I tell you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Net Mums podcast. Now... I'm really looking forward to chatting to today's guests, as she is the queen of all things anger and rage, a title that I am aiming for many days in my own life. God, it's one of those mornings. Alison, please tell me that I am not the only one.
Do you know what? I think I'm in my era of actively trying to avoid anger and rage. Like, I've stopped watching the news.
And oh, you're such a grown-up.
And I avoid getting... I used to dive into conversations on social media about controversial things just to give my opinion. And now I actively avoid them. And I go, no, I don't have to get involved with that. So this is going to be a really interesting chat, I think, Wendy.
Tell us who today's guest is, please.
Our guest today is Jennifer Cox, a psychotherapist, writer, speaker, and the author of Women Are Angry, a bold, brilliant book that lifts the lid on the silent rage simmering beneath the surface of everyday life for women. Through her Instagram community, Women Are Mad, Jennifer has created a space where thousands of women feel seen, validated, and a little less alone. Jennifer, a warm welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
What are your anger levels today on a scale of zero to angry?
I have to say, I think since writing the book, they're much better than they used to be. I think it was a very cathartic experience. And I think all the conversations I've had since, where other women have opened up and talked really openly to me about what they're angry about, I think that's really kind of reset my scores, because it's sort of when you realise that other people are as furious as you are about everything going on in our lives, it feels like community. It feels like here we are having a good chat, getting it out. It's very healthy.
So let's talk about anger. There are lots of things, as you might have gathered, that I feel angry about. But as you say, many women don't even realise how angry we are, and that our rage is hidden. Alison talked about the silent rage simmering beneath the surface. Mine is not silent, but tell us more about that silent rage.
So basically, if you kind of think about when we grew up, when we were tiny, and all the way through our tweenhood and into our teens, the messaging was always, be good, be nice, be quiet, be kind, be sweet, be gentle. We weren't given a vocabulary to talk about anything really negative or something that might have hurt our feelings or offended us or made us angry. We just didn't have that kind of lexicon at our disposal. And I think what I've realised, you know, obviously with in years now working with women, is that once you start to give permission to particularly female patients in my case, to really like deep dive into what it is in a day, in an hour, that might have in fact not irritated them, not frustrated them, but made them out and out furious. Like, whatever they've come in with as a presenting symptom, whether it's anxiety, whether it's depression, whether it's migraines, is rapidly improved. And that, and I could only begin to conclude this is because we have so much repressed rage within us. And then, obviously, as I kind of did more research into the kind of nitty-gritty science of it, and there is a fair bit, but it's very much like lab settings. It's really kind of not come into the real world. But I started to apply that much more and realized, oh my God, yes, here is my evidence. It's true. It's real. And the good health, the better health in my patients was the real kind of data I needed.
It's so interesting hearing you talking about the way that we were brought up, and so many of us were brought up with the aim of being good girls. And as parents now, I've got three girls, and even this morning, one of my daughters was saying, I don't want to get into trouble with my teacher today because I'm a good girl. And I really thought about the chat that we were going to be having. And I was thinking, okay, what's a good reaction here? And I said, you know, it's great to be good, but that shouldn't be, you know, the only thing that you're aiming for. You know, you can be strong, you can be brave, you can be fun, but also you can make mistakes and you can have days when actually things don't go to plan, and that's okay. And I was like, madly just trying to think of, like, what's the right thing to say in this?
Like mad.
Yeah.
But, you know, tell us why you think that teaching our kids that trying to be good can actually be damaging.
God. I mean, I think we are the lived examples of that. Like, if you think about every woman you know, she will have at least one sort of minor to major health complaint. She just will. By this point, we all do. And when you start looking at the stats of where that might have come from in terms of what we've done with emotion in our own bodies, it's alarming. And I think this is why, like, that conversation you had this morning is so important. And look how different it was to a conversation that you might have had, like, last week before you thought about, you know, what we were going to be saying today. And I just think if we can all be a bit more aware of just how much we censor ourselves and stop ourselves from just simply taking up the little kind of centimetres worth of space on this planet, holding our ground, you know, like asking for something we need. It's absolutely shocking how little we do that. And if we can just draw our attention a bit more to that, that I think will help guide us and steer us in terms of, like, how we're talking to our own children, especially the daughters. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting how you struggle to sort of find the words. Oh, what do I say? I don't want to tell her be naughty. I don't want to say be a bad girl.
Yeah.
But my God, there's a gulf. There's like a chasm. There's so much she would have to do to become disobedient or like rule breaking. You know, I think we all need to be a bit realistic about that. You will have brought her up to be a considerate, kind person.
I have. I really have.
You really have.
I get a gold star.
Yeah, you get five.
You've been a good girl.
You've been a very good girl.
Oh, it's so complex.
I know. Look at where it starts.
Yes.
We need to get naughty.
We do.
So it's interesting you should say this about suppressing needs and emotions. So I remember when I had a kind of 9-10 month old baby, and I had postnatal depression, and I was speaking to somebody to help me. And the light bulb moment for me was her saying, you're so unable to ask for help that you won't even text your husband and say, we need milk. You will dress the baby, drag the baby out screaming, put yourself in a stressful situation to go and get the milk because you won't ask for the milk. Did you have that kind of light bulb moment when you realised that you'd been trained to suppress all of those our own needs and your own emotions?
Yes, I did. And mine came, I think it was sort of late, kind of, let's say, uni era. Because essentially I'd been brought up to be a carer to my older sister. And, you know, it's no one's fault. That's the way it is. In those days, people didn't say young carer, but they would have now. And it was extremely painful as an experience, but it was so normal to me. I didn't ever step outside and, you know, look at myself as someone that needed to be felt sorry for or maybe needed a bit more by way of support herself. And it was only really when I kind of got to college and started studying this stuff that these kind of realities really dropped into place for me. And I thought, what the hell have I been doing? And I guess it is quite a unique perspective in that it was quite an extreme perspective. But what it made me realise was that so many girls, I was in a,
you know, situation with there, like studying and being friends with, were sort of being asked to do similar, not obviously in as extreme a way, but still, like, they would be sort of relied on by family to be the person that, you know, would say yes to everything, would get top marks in everything, would keep their bedroom very tidy and possibly, you know, babysit siblings and all the rest of it without being asked. There's so much that I think I realised we just did without being asked. You guys will know. It's like, imagine anyone having to say to you, will you, you know, put this wash on, or will you clean the kitchen table? I mean, it just happens. You just find yourself doing it. And of course, as mums, it's inevitable. But when did that start? Like, for most of us, it started way, way back before we can even remember. And I think the kind of lived example, like, not even if you get into the kind of cleaning and the domestic stuff, it's just that you will be somebody that takes responsibility for herself. And you won't ever, as you're saying, Wendy, put that on anyone else. You won't expect that anyone else would, you know, need to come forward and do any caretaking of you, because you're the caretaker. You'll sort it all out. You'll go get the milk, even if you're going out in like sub-zero temperatures with a tiny baby, all like under a coat. It's like, there's no question. That's your job. That's what you do.
Yeah.
And it's insane. We're crazy.
Yeah, we are. And you've mentioned already about how repressed anger can manifest itself in our bodies and how so many women have health issues. Is that genuinely, like, do we know that there's a correlation between anger and repressed emotion and physical health issues? And what are some of the signs that you've seen in your own clinic of that happening?
Yeah, so it is, sadly, a kind of established reality. Again, it's more, I would say, in the kind of lab, clinical, medical settings that we know this, but it's starting to sort of seep out. I mean, you know, The Body Keeps the Score, that kind of the famous book that kind of brought it into the public sphere more. I think it was in the 70s or something. But he, I think he was revolutionary in that this is, as psychotherapists, we've known this forever, that people hold emotion in their bodies and that our bodies express our emotions, the things that we're not able to say or like articulate. But I don't think the general public were aware. And I think it's still, GPs know it. I mean, I've got a lot of friends who are GPs and we talk about this frequently, that, you know, if only you could offer psychotherapy to patients instead of just sending them off with a kind of, I don't know, prescription for a bit of physio or something that you know isn't going to work, because the physio just gives you an exercise sheet and it's about something that's being held in the body at such deep levels. So there's a lot of clinical evidence. And I really felt it was my job to start kind of spreading the message really widely to women in particular about how we can all start seeing it this way, because it's giving ourselves the best shot then of making changes. And it often doesn't have to be like costly or even inconvenient changes. It can literally be like, you know, I've done with my own patients, sort of suggesting that we get energy out of our body in sort of much more regular and like committed ways, so that it just becomes part of our day, like punching pillows when someone said something to us, you know, and we don't know how to respond, but we just take a moment, go to the loo at work, do star jumps in the loo. Like, what I see in my patients and actually now in the kind of Women Are Mad community is that when we start doing this stuff, when we just accept these interactions, these expectations bring negative energy into our body through adrenaline and cortisol levels, and we have to discharge that energy, because otherwise it sits in our cells and it begins a cascade of really negative inflammatory responses which lead to disease. So, you know, this is fact. We know this. Let's do something about it. And yeah, I, as you're kind of asking, there I've got so many really joyful examples of that now, like in my clinic and, you know, I guess across the like hundreds of women I've treated. So I just felt like it was really important to sort of find a way of spreading that message to many more women than I was able to meet, like one-to-one. And it does seem to have worked. It's certainly got a conversation going.
It's landed. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
It's struck a nerve.
So why do you think so many women, especially mums, struggle to even recognise that they're angry, let alone express it? There's still that kind of taboo around maternal rage.
Why do you think that is?
I
think people are scared. I think we're scared of our own feelings, like fundamentally. Because, like we're saying, when we weren't taught to be okay with them, we weren't taught that these are just totally normal and that all humans feel this. It's not just men that get the monopoly on feelings of anger. Actually, what we know is that there was a big worldwide poll in 2022 that showed women actually were more angry than men. So it's sadly a given, but I think there is such a prejudice about the kind of witchy bitchy like vibes of an angry woman. We look ugly, we look out of control, we look dangerous, and you know, God forbid you're in charge of a baby at that point. Everyone's scared of what you might do, and you know, services get involved, and I mean, certainly when I've worked deeply with like women with PND, we get to the anger stuff really quickly, and now I know what I know, I just go straight there, because having had babies myself, I fully understand how your life, everything gets flipped upside down. Your life, your body is turned inside out. Everything has changed. And yet, really, the world around you continues as normal. And not many people have much help. Like, we just don't. And then double that, we're not great at asking for the help because of everything we've talked about. And we don't feel like it's our right. Everyone has babies. Like, who am I to like demand anything different? It's meant to be that you're just sort of naturally amazing at it. There you are.
But you've hit it there. Everyone else is doing it. And why am I not managing?
Yes. And the amount of husbands I hear about that come back from work and go, well, what's the problem? So-and-so's baby, you know, so-and-so's wife is absolutely fine.
I really like your angry husband voice, by the way.
Oh, don't. I've got a repertoire. I tell you, I'm...
Oh, you just made me cackle, like, that's brilliant.
Like a witch, like an angry witch.
Yes. Like an angry witch. Oh, I can do angry witch well, if you would like me to.
I'd love you to. I would love to see that. Yeah, bring her on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I found it really fascinating to read you talking about the link between anger and online trolls, because my own experience of trolls is that so many of them, you realise, are middle-aged women with really responsible jobs. Like, you'll see them talking about how they're teachers or they work in hospitals or... And it's like, it's mind-blowing. Do you think that they're simply venting all of this built-up anger in a socially acceptable way?
Yes, I think that's exactly what's going on. I'm so sorry that's been your experience. I mean, it's horrendous. And I think we all know how brilliant women are at being absolute, I'm not going to swear, being
cowbags.
Really horrible to each other. Yes, that one. We're amazing at it, because the thing is, if you haven't been allowed to be outwardly aggressive your entire life, you have to get very good at the sort of cutting comments, at the bitchy asides. You get really socially clever, and we know exactly what to do to just tear each other to pieces. And something that I feel really strongly about actually now is that every time we get that impulse in us to say something a bit denigrating or mean about another woman, oh, look at her hair, oh God, did you see that skirt, that stuff, just stop and understand that that is programming. That is an own goal by the patriarchy to make us fight amongst ourselves so that our power never exceeds where they want us to be. We're trapped by it. We're so busy being nasty to each other. And yeah, I think releasing, as you say, Alison, releasing our kind of pent up fury that we can't express anywhere else on each other, that we don't progress, we get capped. And that's something that I'm really like, I've got it. I'm conditioned that way. We've all been brought up like this. Honestly, every time I feel myself like see someone on Instagram looking a bit, oh, a certain way, or oh, what's she doing? I'm no. And you have to do it consciously. Like it's habit. We just have to relearn the habit.
Yeah.
Say something good, say something positive, like send an amazing comment, like you are the best and I love you. Like,
let's not get Alison starting on the comments about flattering clothing, otherwise we really will see her age.
Alison, I want to hear about this.
Oh, it just winds me up when people talk about flattering clothing and how it's basically called for, that makes you look slimmer than you are. And it just bugs me because actually, can we not just wear clothing that brings us happiness? Why do we have to be constantly trying to make ourselves smaller and shrink ourselves? But Wendy's heard me rant about it many a time.
Yeah, many.
Good. I like this rant. I like it.
So what tools do you have for dispelling and expressing some of this anger in a healthy, non-destructive way? You joked about screaming into a pillow.
Yes.
And when the thing that always bugs me is when people say, go and have a nice bubble bath.
Oh, no.
Oh, do piss off. A bubble bath is not going to make you feel better.
Do absolutely piss off.
So, and screaming into a pillow is not my thing. So what do we do if it's bubbling up and you can't just scream at someone because that's not very constructive? What do we do?
I mean, we have to recognise, I think, that it is in our body. That's where it starts. And if we want to get it out, like in a really direct and just efficient way, the best way is out through our body. So I think if you're not, and it's funny, the whole kind of screaming thing, women really struggle with screaming. Like I've taken women on a few like screams now, like where you get a group together and you take them off into a secluded spot and you absolutely let rip, and it is amazing, but you have to help women do it, like, because it's like, what I'm allowed.
Can I just interrupt a second with a funny screaming story, please?
Please.
So one of my friends, Mark, went to a very wonderful spa retreat in Bali, and as part of this spa retreat, there's a sacred waterfall, and you go and you kind of immerse your head in this sacred waterfall, and it's all very spiritual. And he sent me a video of him and his husband at this waterfall, and all you can hear is full-on screaming. And it's because at the top of the waterfall was the anger retreat. So there was a bunch of 10 women from Liverpool at the top of the waterfall screaming like you've never heard. And he's there going, trying to cover himself. And I said to him, did you hear this? He was like, yeah, it was a bit weird. We weren't sure what to do. So we just kept splashing the water and pretending we couldn't hear them screaming.
Oh,
but
I
did think at that retreat might want to separate their meditation and their screaming.
Different day. Anyway. I love that, like the kind of the strata of the waterfall, top level, bottom level.
Yes.
They're so good. So screaming is hard. Screaming is hard, and you have to really like ease women in. And what I often say is, if you can't do it for you, do it for a woman in your life who really had no voice. And that, I mean, that releases a lot, often a lot of tears, actually. It's powerful. And I think in a kind of ordinary day, like if we're at the office, it's very difficult to go and scream. Although, maybe not.
I'm just thinking of the little soundproof booths in the Net Mum's office and whether we'd get away with going in and having a scream. I'm not sure they're that soundproof.
That's the trouble, isn't it? It's like, once you realise how much noise you can actually make with this body is quite astonishing. So I think running, anything with impact, anything where you are getting the energy out of your body, this negative impacted energy onto another surface, is really, really effective. So running, jumping on the spot, running on the spot, star jumps, like that kind of transfer of kinetic force from like one surface to another is really like magic. I mean, I really think that's kind of why running is sort of quite popular among women, because it's free and you can do it whenever you can fit it in, and it really works. Like, it's not great for your joints, but I mean, in terms of that just ability to get it out, there's nothing quite like it, I think, especially if you're like away from, you know, the public, and you could really like do some moves, do some crazy moves at the top of a mountain. I think like even doing kind of karate sort of chops and punching the air. I mean, I've experimented with the gamut now, you can imagine. Like, I do have quite a repertoire myself. And, oh, screaming in the car is good.
Oh, like, that's a good one.
Driving to a secluded spot. Make sure the windows are up. Yeah, music on.
You mean not outside the primary school when everyone else is going to the school run? Windows up. That always reminds me of that Simpsons episode where Marge stops on a bridge and sits in her car and screams for an hour.
Oh, does she?
Do you remember that one?
Yeah. No! Inspo.
Our hero, Marge. Yeah.
She was ahead of her time. I love it. Do you know what? Something that I do, especially if I'm like, if my kids are just really pushing my buttons and I'm busy making them dinner and we're doing stuff, Susie Redding, the psychologist, she told me about this thing called lion's breath, where it's basically like, I'm gonna look like a right idiot doing it now, but it's basically like a bit like
screaming. No, my yoga teacher does them. I know
but
the one you mean.
No noise. You kind of go. And so it's a bit like screaming.
A silent scream.
And in that moment of, I can't actually scream because my kids might be alarmed, it actually does work.
I do wonder if we all had been more, just more loud, more like shouty, more laughy, more out there, whether they'd have got used to it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things was that you have to be so quiet around babies. Shh, 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 shh. Isn't it?
Like, yeah, until you have number two, and number one spends the whole time screaming in their ear. or in your case, with twins, surely they just screamed at each other.
They did.
Yeah.
Now, Jennifer, you touched on how anger is judged very differently depending on who's expressing it. Can you talk a little bit about how race, class and age affects how women's anger is received?
Yes. Wow. I mean, I think it's really complicated because it's a bit like all these things intersect at various points, like also depending on where that woman is, like literally in her environment, like is she at work, is she with her mom. It's impossible to sort of say, broadly speaking, this group struggles in this way with anger, or this group finds it hard to express this specific thing. I think it's really, really individual, and it's really, really lifetime specific. There's definitely kind of, let's say, patterns and themes. Like, I would say for age, like, I don't know whether you guys have experienced this, but I do think you kind of hit a point where you just go, no, don't care. Just don't care. Just gonna say it. Like, The kind of things I find myself saying in a queue at the bank now to somebody, it's not aggressive, but it is just like saying what's happened. I'm just saying, look, you did just push in front of me and I was standing here. So do you want to just go and stand behind me again now, young man? That there's no way I would have said anything like that to, I don't know, even 10 years ago. So I do think there are definitely like moments in our lives where we go, oh, this is liberating.
I'm just going to go for it.
On that, because it's interesting, because I'm definitely in my avoiding anger era. And I would say I'm much more likely just to let that go. And I've been very much like interested in the Mel Robbins let them theory recently.
I don't really tell me more about
so,
this.
So, well, I guess if you're in the queue and someone jumps in front of you, you'd be like, oh, let them. I'm not gonna turn this into a negative experience that might last, like live, like, you know, stay with me for the whole morning. Just let them.
Okay, that's interesting. But what I would say is that at a deep level, your body will have registered what just happened. Mm. And my worry and what I've noticed in women is that those aggregate little moments, I think that's what we've always done, the let them thing. I don't think that's news. I think that's what we've done. And I'm saying, nah, that's not really
helped. And then it all builds up.
It builds.
Yeah.
So what can we do with that, though? What can you... You know, we've talked about you having the change to be able to say, excuse me, I was in the queue first. But there must be more powerful things that women have created and changed because they've let themselves get mad.
Well, I guess if I think about the community, the book I've written, which I wouldn't have dared write this book in my 20s, like, as if, you know, you have, because you can't say this stuff out loud. And I think this is why it did hit a nerve, actually, is because so many women have read it and gone, oh yeah, maybe we can. And what does this mean for my life? Like, if I'm allowed to say it. So if you'd said to your husband just at the time, oh, could you get the milk when you're out? Imagine how much energy you'd have had left. I mean, not when you've got a tiny baby. We don't have energy then. But later on, if that had been a precedent that had been set and that had continued in all the various little ways, like throughout your marriage, then how much more energy would there have been for you to get on with, I don't know, going for a promotion or like starting a podcast or whatever it is? Every woman has examples in her life, I think, of where there is potentially a crossroads. And I think that from the messages I've received back, women are finding this book is potentially that for them, a moment where they go, oh yeah, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore, I'm stopping. Yeah. And then what happens then, what's available to them?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You've talked about anger being a kind of like a GPS for the soul. Can you explain what that means? Like, how can we use anger to guide us, like guide our decisions, rather than kind of, I guess, be scared of it?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Because I think we do think of it as being negative, like net negative, basically, don't we? But I think we have to kind of give it a bit of a sort of PR makeover, because it's not negative, it's just a cue. It's just telling us that something about this situation needs to change. And that's where the kind of GPS idea comes in. It's a steering tool. It can help you think, actually, what is it about this situation I'm in that hasn't been working for me, and what could look different about it? And I think that's the positive sort of fuel for change that we need to take from it. And also, when you think about things like activism, it's often with a real kind of joy that the most successful initiatives have got going. It's like, yeah, this needs to change, but we're not going to go about it in a sort of really ranty and kind of negative way. We're going to just decide we're moving forward as like joyful warriors, and we're doing this together, and it's going to look different. We've decided this is going to look different. And that's what Women Are Mad was all about. And I think it's sort of, yeah, it's definitely like gained its own momentum.
So if someone has listened to this, us three being slightly ranty and mad, and they've thought, oh God, that's me, and they want to start unpicking that hidden anger, what are some gentle first steps they can take?
I think asking questions. It's a bit like, actually, Alison, you were saying with your daughter, like you stopped yourself and thought, maybe I should give some different answers here than I normally would. So you start searching around your own brain, like for the first time in this kind of zone of, oh, imagine if
imagine if I gave myself permission to challenge something that I've always done the same way and that other people always expect me to do. So if you're always going to get your parents shopping, why don't you see if a sibling can do it this time? If you're always the one that takes them to their hospital appointments, why don't you see if they can use a taxi this time? Like, just little tiny. And what's hard is that we then feel like we have to apologise. We feel like we have to have reasons for it. We don't have to.
We could do a whole nother podcast on sorry.
Oh, jeez. Yep. Oh, I'm there for that. I tell you, like, you could. Because this is what we spend, again, our energy on. We feel so bad. Like, at the weekend, I had a similar thing where a family member was, like, going to be really local, but they hadn't given me much warning. And I felt so bad that I said, I'm really sorry, it's going to be difficult. Because you always could, couldn't you? You could kind of break your leg to get there. But I'm really trying in my life now not to do that and to decide, no, I've got a week ahead with all this in it. I've got to be sensible. I know how much energy I have. I'm going to decide to not push myself all the time. And I think that's what women, like, generally are quite bad at, is going,
really bad.
No, this is my limit.
Yeah, I spoke to my confidence expert yesterday and she sent me the challenge of not saying sorry for 24 hours and I found it really hard. Like, I just, it really made me think of how often my instinct is just to be like, oh,
guaranteed.
sorry. But yeah,
once someone challenged me that I could never start another email with sorry.
So that's, if you're replying, really good challenge.
Even if someone sends you can you do the meeting at 2? Sorry, no. Actually, no, I can't do 2.
Fact.
So don't say sorry. It's a fact.
Yeah.
Oh, so I nearly combusted. It was so hard.
Even if someone's like emailed me twice and I haven't managed to respond, I no longer apologise. I always now say thank you for your patience waiting to hear back from me, or thank you for following up again. I'm trying to eradicate the sorry.
Oh, be more Alison. I like this.
That's really good. Did you ever see that like little meme that went round that was a woman writing an email and then she had to scratch it and do it in the form of a man doing it, and it was literally three words.
Yes.
By the time the man had done it, it was 3 words long.
Yeah.
And hers had been like a massive paragraph.
Yeah.
I think we should all challenge ourselves in that way.
I think so. Well, Jennifer, this has been absolutely wonderful to chat to you. So thank you so much for joining us and coming to chat to us at NetMums.
Such a pleasure. I've loved every second of it.
Thank you, Jennifer. If you could just come and move in, that would be fun.
Yes.
Okay?
That'd be awesome.
I'd be delighted.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in NetMums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.